This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The New Yorker Radio Hour is supported by the Sympathizer podcast from HBO. From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr., The Sympathizer is the new HBO original limited series based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel of the same name. On the Sympathizer podcast, join host Philip Nguyen in conversation with the cast, crew, and author Viet Thanh Nguyen as they discuss the making of this historic series. Stream new episodes of HBO's The Sympathizer, Sundays exclusively on Max, and listen to The Sympathizer podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Amy Poehler is one of the great stars of Saturday Night Live's history, and she was also the center of Parks and Recreation. She spoke at the New Yorker Festival with staff writer Aria Levy. The two go back quite a while. Ari wrote a profile of Amy Poehler when she was performing with the Upright Citizens Brigade. That was in the mid-90s, and the Upright Citizens Brigade then was just a four-person comedy troupe in Chicago, not the huge comedy empire it is today. Poehler also went really big, making the jump from live improv to doing sketch comedy on national television.
Well, in many ways, I think I was one of the last generation of people that used to still perform on stage, and that's how you got a television show. Now, most people do their stuff, and they put it online, and people can see it, and they can email it. Nobody ever has to leave their office to see you. But at the time, it was like very Waiting for Guffman. We would save a seat for the executive at Comedy Central and keep peeking out, you know, the curtain to see if he or she were coming. So we performed on stage a lot for very few people for a long time. And that was a really good, it was good training for failure and rejection, and it was also a good time to experiment and take big risks because literally nobody was watching.
That was something I was going to ask you. Is there anything you miss about not being famous as a performer?
Like, no. No.
You started on Saturday Night Live in September of 2001. Her first show was the first show of SNL on the air after September 11th.
Right, two weeks after. Our first read-through was planned for September 11th, which was, of course, canceled. But
so tell us a little bit about what that was like, starting there at that moment in time.
Well, I had lived in New York 5 years before then, so I considered myself a true New Yorker. We shot UCB in New York, and so unlike other people, I wasn't moving to the city to start this new job, but I had many friends that had already worked in the show, and I was incredibly excited, and then, you know, the nation and the city was under crisis, and there was a lot of talk about will we ever be funny again, right? Do you remember that? Well, can we ever laugh again? Comedy's dead. Everything's over. And so it was a strange and tough time to start a weekly variety show. And so for the first couple months, I just tried to figure out, you know, where the bathrooms were and stayed out of everybody's way. And it was an interesting time to be on a sketch show, frankly, because for the first couple years of SNL, we had to stay away from stuff that is, you know, in many ways it's bread and butter, the kind of heavy political stuff. And there was a lot of pop culture stuff that we did until slowly people started to want to have people, you know, make fun of George Bush again.
How long did that take? How long before it felt admissible?
It varied. The audience really told you what they wanted, and you could, and that's the cool thing about doing live performance, is that the audience, you start to feel, oh, this is what's working, this is what the audience wants. What was lovely about working on that show was very full circle as 2008 came and the campaign came, and suddenly, you know, everybody was paying attention to politics and knowing if you guys remember, it was like a sporting event, and everybody knew everybody's name, so there'd be a very small player. Like, everybody knew that Dennis Kucinich's wife was hot. Do you know what I mean? Like, who, yeah. So there was so much attention being given to every candidate and every person. So you would do something and everybody would laugh and everybody was sharing that moment. And so to start on a show where politics was taboo and end on it when it was like exploding was super fun. But, you know, it was a time of real bad guys. So how do you get somebody, you know, it's one thing to make jokes or to write comedy about Osama bin Laden. It's a lot different to have someone play him. So it was like trying to figure out how to have someone do that. And so it took a while.
The next clip we're going to see is a character that Amy does called Caitlin, which is my favorite thing you do. And I think you could watch. There's no context.
Let me tell you something. I want a star earring. No, I want a diamond. No, I want a K. No, I want a diamond K. I want a diamond K, a peace sign, a cross, an arrow, a rainbow. And then my ears will look so good that people will be taking my picture. And I'll be like, over here, Caitlin, over here. And I'll be like, la, 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 la.
Caitlin. La, la, la. Caitlin. You have to wear a standard gold stud, and you have to keep it clean to avoid infection. I know a girl whose belly button ring got infected, and now she's in a wheelchair.
Oh, my God. Rick, can I have a sip of your soda for sustenance?
No more soda for you.
Yeah, I can't have any more soda, because one time I drank a ton of Mountain Dew, and I stayed up all night, and then I was like, oh, what a beautiful morning! Oh, what a beautiful day! And then the next day, I was super grumpy. Remember that, Rick?
Isn't that the best thing ever? I love that. I want to adopt that kid.
Is
that
one person in that scene has an Academy Award.
The cousin's Kate Winslet. is that what you were like as a kid?
Yeah, a little bit. Not as hyper, if that's the correct term, but or a PC term. I don't know. Spazzy? Probably worse. But it was a real look at me kind of kid. And I love that age, girl, that age, very like all elbows and lots of big dreams. And I want to be a veterinarian and a firefighter and a waitress and an actress and like all that stuff where girls that age are, you know, not really interested in boys yet and very enthusiastic about the world. So and frankly, that was written with Emily Spivey, who's longtime partner of mine, and it was kind of our homage to Gilda's Judy Miller character, which was the brownie who would, you know, jump off the bed and bang herself into the door. So it was a attempt at an homage to her.
I think the thing I love about that so much is the physicality. It's just, it's exactly what that age is like. A girl's totally comfortable and probably just scrambling around.
Yeah, and we used to, used to wear like a binder, and I always kept my fly open. Just little things. Actor secrets.
Who did you like to watch besides Gilda Radner?
Yes, Gilda and all the SNL people. Although, frankly, to be honest, I kind of caught up with them later. I was much more in Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy was my time at SNL when I was like 10. I find SNL when you're like 13 is like your prime time. Mm-hmm. You know, meaning who's on whenever you're like, you know, I was a huge Jan Hooks fan growing up. And Jan Hooks, I think I was like 14 when Jan Hooks was on. I loved Carol Burnett, but a lot of the physical stuff, and Steve Martin and Eddie Murphy, probably Woody Allen, all that kind of stuff.
One of the great things about you on SNL was that we got to see you be funny not just as characters, but also as yourself on Weekend Update, or as yourself as a character, I guess. So could we see the clip from Weekend Update, please, of Amy and Seth talking about Rod Blagojevich?
Really?
Really? And really, it's 2008. Did you not know that people tap phones? Really? You never seen a TV show or a film? When you're doing something illegal, you need to speak in code. When I call up my weed dealer and I ask for $50 worth of circus tickets, you know what he doesn't give me? Circus tickets!
Really?
Really?
And really, how did you think you'd get away with this? George Ryan, the governor before you, was in jail for pretty much the same thing. When people are burned, they become vigilant. Really? My friend once brought a girl home who turned out to be a dude. So every time he meets a girl, you can bet he checks for an Adam's apple.
Really?
Really?
Really, that really happened to Seth's friend.
Really?
Really, yeah. Really. And you know what? It's beside the point, but the hair. Really? It looks like you're wearing a toupee that's also wearing a toupee.
Really? It's like you have a proceeding hairline. Is that really your hair, or did you grow out your eyebrows and comb them up?
Really?
Really.
It's like someone put the hair on backwards and one of those Fisher-Price people. Really? The first time I saw you, I thought you were walking away. Really?
Blagojevich, you're supposed to put the Rogaine on the crown, not the forehead. Really, I thought you had a bad temper, but maybe your head is just hot from being under that bearskin rug.
Really?
Really. Ah. I mean, really.
Wow. Huh.
This has been Really with Seth and Amy.
Those were fun.
Tell us about because you and it's almost it's more like stand up almost. I mean, it's not characters.
Well, Seth used to write all of those with additional jokes by our writers, but you know he was the master of all of that. And in real life, we love to talk like that with and to each other. It was just so fun to do that with him because it was so natural, and it was, I think, a bit that showed our real chemistry, which I think we had and we hoped to try to show in the show. But
it's like improv in that way where you're...
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of succeeding and failing together.
Uh-huh, Did you like having the opportunity to do social commentary in such a direct way?
Yeah, it was... You learned at SNL that, you know, when you were like, I really want to say something. I want to make a point. It was like, oh, boy. You know, there's nothing worse than, like, being angry. When we had Sarah Palin on the show, we had many political people on the show. You know, you have to kind of try to make... there's nothing gained when someone's in front of you and you're being mean to them. Like, it just doesn't work. The audience doesn't like it, and you look like a jerk, and you're just like, you know, you can't make your point. And it's a comedy variety show. It's not Crossfire. So you have to find a way to make it still funny.
Tell us how you came up with that amazing rap you did when Sarah Palin was on.
Yeah, well, I was very pregnant. I gave birth 5 days later, I think.
I remember watching it and thinking it was so funny, but also being tense, because I was like, if she doesn't stop rapping so hard...
Yeah, her stomach's going to fall out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Her baby's going to come out of her butt.
Baby's going to come out.
Yeah. Me too. There's something kind of cool about being 9 months pregnant on TV. It's weird. It's like you have this weird power because, first of all, everybody has to get out of your way. So you take up a lot of space and you bang into people and everybody's kind of nervous for you and it's kind of exciting.
Because you may blow. Like,
yeah,
a
you may,
excitement.
Right. And there's a lot of like, yeah, and everyone kind of looks at you like a freak, like... But it's exciting.
Yeah.
I can't explain it, but or maybe I'm trying to. But and then also there's a hormonal freedom where you're like, I don't care. I'm not good. Right? So the combination of like, oh, fuck it, and the combination of like feeling kind of weirdly powerful, I just wrote it. She was very game. And regardless of anyone's politics, you know, there's a certain amount of respect you have to have when somebody... When you say, hey, come into our house and will you come do this? You know, you can't, well, you could, but I thought it was bad manners.
Yeah.
To, they're being game. And at the time, the election was very close. So there was this feeling of, wow, everything these candidates are doing right now is important. Every move they make is super important. So it was a really exciting time.
Another person who you've risen with in tandem is Tina Fey. So I wonder what it's like making a movie with somebody who you did, you know, sketch with, improv with when you were 22.
It's a blast. It's like, it feels like cheating. It feels like you're getting away with something. I mean, we certainly knew each other when we were diamonds in the rough. And both would probably say late bloomers in many different ways. And so...
what ways?
physically in our face and body parts, and professionally, and finding all of it. No, but we, you know, we were still, you know, still, we weren't famous at 30, so we were still, you know, schlepping and doing our thing and trying. So we had, we felt like, you know, we got to experience a lot of similar things together, and it was really nice to have a partner like that along the road, for sure. We got to kind of just be idiots together. And that's sometimes all you really want in your comedy, is two people that you like being idiots together. It's a good recipe for a hit. And women don't always get to be that way. Sometimes they have to be like, you guys, stop being idiots. Or, you know, they have to be like, oh, I slept with that idiot.
In addition to letting us see female idiots, some other great work that Amy does is Amy's character Leslie Knope in Parks and Recreation. And tell us a little bit about how that character evolved. And
well, Mike Schur, who is the creator and captain of the massive ship, he worked with me at Saturday Night Live. He was the head writer on Update when I was there, and he went on to have great success working and producing on the Office with the American Office and Steve Carell. And then he went off with Greg Daniels to produce his own show. And he had pitched me this idea about doing a show. And Leslie was his creation.
For you.
Yes, yeah. Written for me. But certainly he had this idea of who this person was before I kind of was introduced to her. And then we talked about her for a long time, and I had the luxury of, you know, sketch comedy is very transient, very disposable. And for the first time, I got to really sit and think about this person and build a character together with someone. It was really exciting. And so we did that. We started to create this person. And then in the course of the show, we started to refine her as it went on. But it's been, someone asked me the other day about playing her, and it's just so actory, I'm sorry, but it's like the most fun character I've ever played, because she's a real, close to a real person. Meaning, I used to really like shows growing up where I could imagine what the character was doing on the weekends. Like when I wasn't watching them. Mm-hmm. And Leslie is this really optimistic, incredibly big-hearted, not cool, goofball. But the show really lets us go to sweet and soft places, which is nice for, you know, a sketch comedian to get to turn the volume down a little bit. So it's a dream.
Let's watch a clip from it. This is when Leslie is talking to her friend Anne about internet dating.
Yellow-haired female, likes waffles and news.
Sexy, well-read blonde, loves the sweeter things in life.
Much better.
Hobbies.
Organizing my agenda. Wait, that doesn't sound fun. Jamming on my planner.
Favorite place.
Upstairs, there's this mural of wildflowers, and I like to sit on a bench in front of it.
Really? It could be anywhere in the world. Paris, Hawaii, the Grand Canyon.
Nope, just the bench in front of the mural.
What about like an actual meadow where wildflowers are?
Ew, Anne, I'm scared of bees. Mural.
Okay, what do you think of dogs?
Love.
Cats?
Love.
Fish?
Love.
Turtles?
No opinion. They're condescending. The great Rashida Jones.
Leslie, the main thing about her is her driving force is she's someone with a life plan, and she's.
Well, it's fun to play someone ambitious, and you know, I think in the beginning of the show, people found her optimism to be kind of naivete, and I don't think that, you know, believing one person can make a difference or that change is going to come is means that you're silly or you're like uninformed, and so I was trying to find the balance of how do you play someone optimistic and not make them seem like they're clueless. But she's also very ambitious and has a lot of, you know, like she's really driven. So that's been fun to play on the show in the last
couple
seasons.
Organized.
Very organized.
Jamming on her planner.
Yeah.
Are you like that? Are you someone who's super organized, has had a life plan?
No. No. I'm not that much like her. In real life, that character, she loves to go camping, for example. And I do not. But I do think I share a similar sense of, like, believing in the bigger idea of life. I don't know if that makes any sense. But I plug into and really like and respond to the fact that she, thinks you can't do it alone. And so she likes to rally the troops. I certainly like to rally the troops. That's certainly what we have in common.
In life plan-wise, do you think you thought of your life being like this? Like, is this where you thought you'd be at this age?
Yes.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Amy, thanks so much for being here tonight, and thanks for being such a great audience.
Thank you, everybody. Thank you. That was really good.
Actress and comedian Amy Poehler talking with The New Yorker's Aria Levy. They spoke at the New Yorker Festival back in 2011. A few months ago, Poehler revived her great Hillary Clinton impression as a guest on Saturday Night Live, and you've got to believe that we'll see more of that this year.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.